Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Segment of our show, Natalie Lacoste-Hoffman and Alan Weatherall will be telling us a little bit about CCHA. So if you could introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about the Alliance, that'd be great.
My name is Natalie Lacoste-Hoffman. I am a volunteer board member on the CCHA board. Canadian Congenital Heart Alliance is completely made of volunteers. The board members are all volunteers. And we have been an alliance since 2004. I live with congenital heart disease myself. That's my introduction for now, I guess.
Hi, I'm Alan Weatherall. I'm the executive director of the CCHA, and I've been with the organization for about 7 or 8 years now, and I only work part-time, like just a few hours a week, just to keep some of the background things going and try to do the administrative work behind the scenes. And I do not have congenital heart disease, but it's been an eye-opener for me over the years just to see and meet people that do live with CHD. And it's quite a challenge for many people, but fortunately, there's all sorts of medical advances, too, that we can chat about.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how does CHD typically affect a person?
CHD is from birth. You are born with your congenital heart defect. And for many people, there are surgeries that CHD is a lifelong disease. It starts at birth. And for many, we will go through a variety of surgeries and other trying to find my words and it's not working. We will find CHD is a lifelong disease. It starts at birth. And most people will have to go through different surgeries and other types of medical, what's the word I'm looking for, Alan?
Interventions.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Right. That would be the word.
All right. CHD affects a person right from birth throughout the lifespan. Most CHD people will have to have many surgeries and other procedures throughout their lifespan. It is not a curable disease. It is something that you can live with, but it is never cured. For many, we can go on to lead productive, full lives, but it tends to be interrupted with medical surgeries, interventions, etc., throughout our lifespan. It's important that we are followed by medical, specialized medical teams throughout our lives. For many in childhood, it means that you might not be able to play with your friends in the same way as other people, that you might not be able to chase them around, that tag might not be your friend, that type of thing. But you can lead a perfectly normal life otherwise.
So,
yeah, I guess the good news of all of it is the fact that many decades ago, many of the congenital heart disease symptoms, if that's the right word to use, were untreatable, not even with surgery, but through medical advances, including things like heart bypass, where they can actually go in, of course, and stop the heart and do some medically required procedure and then start the heart up again. And I've told this story many times to other people, but we met a three-month-old boy up in London that had, only when he was hours old, had a procedure done to the, it's called the transposition of the great arteries, and the arteries leading in and out of your heart were reversed. So they went in, stopped the heart, reversed the arteries, and started the heart again, and that little boy was surviving. It was amazing to see that, but there's hundreds and thousands of other stories similar to that.
So,
in the 1960s, only about 20% lived to adulthood. Now it's closer to 90 to 95% that live to adulthood and live rich lives, still quite old.
So, how does the Alliance reach out to those who could potentially benefit from having a greater awareness, greater understanding of CHD?
We, each February, through CHD Awareness Month, we hold our Lit Red campaign, where we have monuments throughout Canada lit in red for CHD. And we also have various provinces have proclamations that recognizing CHD as an important thing to be aware of and to continue to bring to the front.
As you can appreciate, a national organization like ours, it's coast to coast, so it's tough to meet or get in touch with people across Canada. But social media over the last few years has taken a big step forward to allow us to meet and greet so many more people. But it is an awareness thing. A lot of people are certainly unaware of what congenital heart disease even is. And sometimes you get people confused, you know, the fact that, oh, I have an uncle that has that. No, no, that's congestive heart failure. It's quite a difference. Congestive is acquired, congenital is born with. So, but there's also about roughly 257,000, there's the exact numbers unknown, but roughly 257,000 Canadians that were born with some form of CHD, and there's over 40 different congenital heart issues that people can be born with. And each year, approximately 4,000 babies arrive in Canada with some form of CHD. And identifying those issues has become much more prevalent now, too, that the doctors can look for things, and there's more things that can be seen and discovered even before, and still in vitro with ultrasounds. And so many times a baby arrives, and they already know there's a heart issue. So the treatments are just fast increases to things that people can be helped with now, well before they're even born.
So
it's important to note, too, that out of those 260,000 or so people born with congenital, about two-thirds of those currently are adults. And it's important to note that often the care needed for adults is lacking in different parts of Canada. And so being aware of, making people aware of this is very important.
One of the things we've discovered, too, over the last several years is the fact that many people, you know, born with CHD, their parents take them to the doctor regularly, and then they turn 18, so they're considered adults, so they have to look after their own care, and many don't. So they go through their 20s and 30s and with having seen no doctor, and all of a sudden in their 40s or 50s, they have an issue. Well, it's tough to find a doctor to begin with. Of course, it's even tougher to find a doctor who has experience in adult congenital heart issues. So that's a big thing that we're trying to push as much as possible to encourage people to go and see a doctor to make sure that they are looked after as they mature even more so.
Like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Rachel Olson will be giving us an update on the Brain Injury Association of Windsor-Essex. So what can you tell me about the latest work of the Brain Injury Association?
Well, our most recent event was dueling pianos at the Scholars Club. That went really well. And what we have coming up is our classic car show. We're putting it on with Yesterday and Today's Shiny Toys, so it'll be about 300 or 400 classic and new cars. That's at Colasanti's on May 17th. And then we have our conference coming up on June 5th at the WFCU Center. It's on intimate partner violence and traumatic brain injury.
So what was the inspiration behind the upcoming conference?
Well, it's not been declared an epidemic in Ontario, but I believe it has in Windsor, intimate partner violence. And it's something that's often overlooked in terms of brain injury. There are so many things to address when someone leaves an abusive situation that often brain injury gets overlooked and it goes undiagnosed and untreated.
So would that be focusing more along the lines of mental health or physical
damage? Yeah, it will be focusing on the mental health effects on women and children.
So how are you reaching out to the affected community to let them know that this could be something that would be good for them?
We are reaching out to anyone and everyone in the community, mostly healthcare professionals, legal, educators, and we do that through, email blasts, and we also have been doing cold calls, just going to different establishments and letting them know about this event.
So take me through a little bit of dueling pianos. I'd love to hear the details of that.
Yeah, so that's an annual event we've been doing for years. We did it at the Yacht Club for a long time, but we recently transitioned over to the Scottish Club. We wanted a sort of more casual vibe. And so it's two pianists who play songs by request, by donation, and that's how we make the money off of it, is through ticket sales and through donations to the pianists. It's a really, really fun night. It's really exciting and fun, and just, you know, dancing and singing, and people have a great time.
So for those who might not be as familiar with some of the programs and services of the association, could you tell me about some of the standing work you do?
Sure, yeah. So we mostly do support groups and social services, like social groups. So we have our Survivor Social once a month where we need to do an outing or we have an activity or a game. We have two art classes. We have a music class. We have support groups like You Are Not Alone. And then we have our coffee chats that we do twice a week, which is just an open chat. People join online and can talk about whatever they like. And we find that those programs are really, really popular. Ones that people can just get together and talk. We find those are really beneficial for our clients. And we also offer social work services. So needing any help with housing or applications, forms, navigating systems, we have a social worker who helps our clients with that.
So I'd imagine that the coffee chats you mentioned and just the sense of community has a great benefit in so much as having a brain injury, I know from experience, can be an isolating thing. People might start to think, I'm the only one and there's no hope in the world.
Isolating is the word that we use all the time. It's a very isolating injury to have because it is invisible, partly is the problem. You often cannot tell that somebody has a brain injury. And so when the behaviors are different or the challenges are not what other people in their lives are experiencing, it can create a real distance between themselves, their friends, and their family. And people sort of drift away not knowing how to support or wanting to support. And so having a community through coffee chat or You Are Not Alone or even our social groups can be life-changing for somebody to find that sense of connection again and to not feel so isolated and alone.
So in your time with the association, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
The growth of our groups is a success for us. The more people we reach coming to our groups means a lot. It means more connection for everyone, more support for everyone. Something big that we did that was significant in terms of awareness was our Unmasking Brain Injury art project, which we did in 2018. We got like these plain white masks that our clients each painted with what they felt represented their brain injury, their symptoms, and the differences in their lives now. And that was shown across the city. It was at the art gallery. And we recently showed it again at our recent client art exhibit. palette of expressions. And people are very, very moved by this display, because you see how different everyone's story is in terms of how to sustain their injury and how it impacts them now. And you get a real close, nuanced look at the ways it impacts people, because brain injury impacts everyone differently. And so that mask project was significant in terms of raising awareness about that. Really just the growth of our programs we find to be the success of what we're doing.
So do you have any advice for folks out there who might be feeling that sense of isolation we discussed and just might be dealing with a fresh brain injury and wondering, is there still hope for me?
I would say, yes, there is. And please contact us, because you wouldn't believe how much it can help just to connect with people who understand you, who understand what you're going through, and who can validate you and say, yes, I've been there. Yes, I experienced that too, and you're not alone. I can't stress it enough, like, how much people feel alone in this. And that's why we're here. But the big part of why we're here is to help people feel less alone and to give them the services and support that they need. I would really encourage anyone experiencing this to reach out to us, to get involved, to give us and yourself that chance to connect with others and to move forward in this journey. They say the first 2 years are when you experience the most healing from your brain injury. However, you can experience more after that, certainly with support and guidance from those who have been there. So I would say, please reach out.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Alan Weatherall and Natalie Lacoste-Hoffman told us a little bit about CCHA. Rachel Olson gave us an update on BIAWE. In this segment of our show, Winton Merchant will be sharing a little bit of his disability story. So what can you tell me about your disability story?
Well, that's a good question. Are you talking as a parent, or are you talking about our encounters at church or school? Do you want me to start with my son when he was diagnosed, or where do you want me to start?
Your son's story would be the ideal.
All right, then. So we waited a long time for our first child, and he finally came along. Waited a long time for our second child, Luke. And Luke, bright child, typical little baby. Everything's going well, but we noticed that he never progressed past crawling, and sooner or later things start to become obvious. Took him to the doctors. I can't thank the medical society enough, although they've dropped the ball many times. They certainly hit the bullseye here, and they rolled out the red carpet, and just one day after another, we want you to come and see this specialist. We have somebody from Germany in Toronto. Can you come down to Toronto tomorrow? And on it went. But at about the age of 14 months, Luke was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy. So you have two sets of nerves. You have your senses, things that are hot, cold, smooth, all those wonderful senses that God has given us. But you also have your motor neurons, and your brain sends a signal down those nerves to tell your legs to move. And those nerves aren't working properly. In fact, they're shutting down. So Luke never did walk, and as time goes on, he gets frailer and frailer. Brilliant mind, but just the body's not cooperating.
So as a parent, how did you keep yourself strong in those dark days, those hard times of going to see specialists and asking the question of what's next?
Wow, that's a good question. I'd like to start by thanking my parents who raised me to understand that God doesn't promise us a soft path. We always knew there were these potentials. You don't send children back. You take them the way you get them. Certainly it was unforeseen. It wasn't expected. We always assume things are going to go well. When Luke was diagnosed, that definitely caught us off guard. And so a number of things. We were coming back from London. They said, come up to London. We have diagnosis. And we thought, this is great. We're going to get on some treatment. And they told us, there's nothing you can do. Go home and enjoy the life you have. It was a very quiet trip on the way home. I didn't know what to say to my wife. And finally, I turned to her and I said, let's pray that this doesn't, overwhelm us. There's some people that never recover. They spend the rest of their life crying in their beer. And we didn't want that for my family. And then I also said, the dark clouds or the dark storms aren't here yet. So let's not get caught up in things that haven't taken place yet. And God graciously answered those prayers. And we came home and we had wonderful people who loved us. And we had people who really didn't know how to react. And to be honest, they dropped off our radar. They just ignored us. So I'm sure you've heard it all. Does that answer your questions?
Absolutely. And, do you have any advice for folks out there who might be starting a diagnosis journey and asking the same questions you did?
Yes. Now, Kim, you know better than anybody. Everybody's story is different and it's unique. But I think something that would be universal is keep good notes. And I mean really good notes. So a little example. When Luke went to school, we'd sit down with a meeting of 14 people to introduce Luke into school. And everybody had a different function and everybody had a different phone name or a phone number. And, I wasn't expecting all this. And the next thing you know, well, who were we talking to? So I would suggest getting a book and dividing it. People who are there, your support staff for school or for medical things, and make notes. You can't keep track of everything, but if you can keep track of preliminary things and contact names, they are the experts. They are the higher authorities, so you can reach out right to the person who might have your answers. That would be one thing. If I had to do it over again, I would make sure I had good notes.
So in the time since Luke's diagnosis, has there been any success that he's achieved that you've noticed that you want to share? Maybe a success story.
That question I didn't see coming. To be honest, permission to speak freely?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Our family isn't orientated towards big successes. We like the daily journey. Those are the things that matter to us and count to us. We've had some wonderful things take place, and Luke has done a number of things. He's articulate, and he's been able to compose things and get a little award here and a little award there. But overall, Luke just maintains a good attitude, and he copes with things well. So, that would be the big success. Anybody can run a sprint, you know. Anybody can run for a minute. But to do a, I'm looking for the right word, a marathon and to daily carry on, that would be the biggest accomplishment that I can think of.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Certainly, yes.
Friends, I'm always amazed at just how much a family's heart can grow when they have someone with a disability in their ranks. The truth is, you don't look at the world the same way. You start to realize disability is not a singular concept, and that once your eyes are opened, you come to perceive so many beautiful shades of existence, and so many potentials, so many adaptations that might never have occurred to you before. The truth is, someone with a disability knows what they need, and they know the most practical way of getting there oftentimes. Might be a little trial and error. It might be a little adaptation for the family. But if you're doing it out of love for those around you, there's no more rewarding thing in this world than to lift someone up, to make them feel validated, recognized, and understood. Disability is also a fusion of what you are and what you have the potential to become. It all depends upon the support systems around you, and your own drive, of course. People tell you all your life what you can't do. How long before that's set in stone? But if people tell you, there's a way to do this, we're going to look into it, and actually deliver on those promises, maybe progress can be made. Being told that you are a worthwhile member of the community, no matter how you move, see, hear, or think, that can be an incredibly validating experience. There's nothing more rewarding than seeing somebody do the thing that we once branded impossible. Things are only impossible until they're not. I know it's a little cliche. Once someone has proven this can be done, how can we say it can't? For parents, I often find that it's a learning curve. Going from what they expected their child would be, seeking a different road, letting them explore their own potential, seeing if they can still get to their dreams. Maybe it's a different way. Maybe it's a process of working with others. But there is always a way to adapt in this world. That's what disability life is. And it's no one's place to put that glass ceiling on another. It's no one's place to say, this is my pronouncement of what you will be. This is all you will ever amount to. For someone with an acquired disability, it's a very different thing than for someone who was born with it. For someone who was born with a disability, I find that, honestly, they just see the world as it is. This is what comes naturally. Someone with an acquired disability, they may see the world as it once was, see themselves somehow as less functional. I implore you, my friends, never see it that way. Someone with an acquired disability simply has to learn new ways of getting things done. They are capable of achieving all their dreams. They are still capable of living a full, rich life. No matter the condition, there is always a way. But others around us must recognize this as well. Must work together to build and to create those potentials. Truly, it's a matter of having the right abilities, the right mindset, the right supports, and the right moments. Put all that together, progress can be made, better communities built. But really, so many of us come to an understanding of disability life when it affects us personally. But I maintain, it affects us all personally. Disability has struck in every family. And even if that weren't the case, is it not a matter of preparing for our own futures, recognizing that someday we all might be dealing with disability life? And more than that, showing a genuine love and respect for those in our community, to give them the full opportunities to experience the richness of what this world has to offer. Just because a person might move differently, see differently, hear differently, think differently, this should never be a reason to tell them that they are any less than any other in society. It should never be a reason to exclude. If you go looking for reasons to exclude, you will find them. But conversely, if you go looking for reasons to include, you'll find those too. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.
Hi, this is Towers, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Diverse, independent, yours.
Cheese, please, yes. Cheese, please, you're so fine. want to listen all the time. Snarf, shoot, and daffodil, spin there.